coincidentally, I was living in New York and I was working for a sports company. And a colleague of mine, Natalie, came across to New York at the same time to do business school. And with her came her husband, Sean. Well, I was out on a run with him one day and he confessed to me that he was going to start a jerky company. And if he wasn't pushing the pace so hard, I think I would have laughed at him. But we got back to his place and he sort of opened his cupboard, which was a shrine to a beef jerky project of his. He explained it to me, and I could immediately recognize a new way to market beef jerky, which he had, of course, as well.
What does a shrine to beef
Yeah.
jerky look like?
So the way he described it to me on this run was, oh, I've got this hobby, I've got a small dehydrator, and I was expecting a very small setup. Especially given he was living in a New York apartment, but we came back, he had this big double cupboard. He opened it, there was probably three or four hobby dehydrators in there, but then he also had packaging samples, all these different product samples. He filled up a little shopping bag for me of all these different things he'd been making. He was really starting to stretch how I'd define a hobby, and by that stage, it was like it was a business ready to start, really.
So, is the jerky market, the snack market in the United States, well developed already?
That's right. It's a huge market. And I think that's how we normally think of jerky. When someone mentions jerky, I think of someone in the States driving a truck, trying to get a piece of jerky out between the seats, just for a quick snack. And it's like a big part of the hunting community as well, people making their own jerky at home. But anyone who's dropped by an American Roadhouse will know just what a huge range of jerky they've had. But that's what we call the traditional market, this sort of masculine snack that's not perceived as healthy in any way, and it's often made with a lot of salt and sugar. But about 5 years ago, a new wave of jerky products hit the market, and they were just branded in a more sophisticated way, not like a knuckle-dragging, masculine brand like many of the traditional brands, but a more sophisticated brand that could appeal to more people, a premium brand, and then a lot of health food claims as well. So I was working for a startup in New York, and by this stage, I was ready to start my own business or at least join another one at the ground floor, be in the first five employees. And so I came back to Australia, and Sean suggested, why don't you start a jerky company in Australia?
And you couldn't think of a really good reason why not.
Exactly. And I'd always been looking for an excuse to move back to Tasmania. I grew up here and I left just about on my 18th birthday to do university in Sydney. And here was something that I knew could work probably better in Tasmania than anywhere else. So,
Why?
first of all, Tasmanian's got a great brand for food. And when people see Tasmanian made, they know that it's a quality product. The second one is just how it fits in with the rest of our beef, not just beef, I should say meat industry. Jerky is a value-added product on secondary cuts of meat. And the reason we use secondary cuts is they're very lean compared to primal cuts. But also, of course, there's an economic benefit there as well. But mostly because they won't spoil when you dry the meat because
They don't go rancid.
That's right, that's right. And when you have premium meat companies, it's very easy for them to sell their primal cuts because they'll get snapped up by restaurants.
But there's the rest of the beast.
That's right, there's the rest of the beast. And when you look at primal cuts for an animal, it takes up a very small percentage of what the animal is. And you do have to do something with the rest of it. And worst case scenario is that you turn the secondary cuts into mince and sell it off as a generic product that's unbranded. And so you've gone to all this effort to create a premium brand, and then you're selling off a lot of the animal as just a generic something or other. Whereas we can approach a meat company and say, well, all those secondary cuts, we can actually add value to those. So by the time it hits the market, it's a premium product that won't detract from your brand. In fact, we think it will add to it.
So then, Tasmania, hormone growth promotant free, grass-fed, that counts for you.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's exactly what consumers are looking for now. And if they're seeing, we use Cape Grim meat. So if they see Cape Grim in the health food aisle of their store in a good setting with the right looking packaging, then of course that brand recognition is going to carry next time they're in a beautiful restaurant in the middle of Melbourne.
So then the packaging's really critical for this. How long's it taken to get to this stage? And I'm holding up a packet. Well, it looks beautiful.
I'm almost embarrassed to say how long that took. It is a lot of work to get it right. Every little thing that we're looking at here had numerous discussions behind it. And I confess, like, looking at it now, like, yeah, there's the little things in the back of your mind. It's like, oh, like, should that tree really be here? Could I move it more this way or that way? And
but we're looking at a Tasmanian landscape here, sesame ginger.
Yeah, yeah, we've got a sesame ginger pack of grass-fed beef jerky here. And in the setting, we have Freycinet National Park, the lookout from One Glass Bay, which is a place I love. The other flavour we have has a scene from Cradle Mountain. We've gone with an all-natural brand, which means we've gone to extraordinary lengths to keep our ingredient statement looking clean. So the best example of that is, well, we don't add sugar, but we do add juice, but we only add juice that has no preservatives in it. So I've got a ton of frozen pineapple juice that has a shelf life of about 10 days that once it's defrosted, that goes into our marinade.
So then this is really creating a different category. That's not quite the right word. Well, yeah. How would you describe it?
We're looking for a different customer than what the traditional jerky is. And we're basically trying to emulate what's happened in the States, where people have had success saying to maybe more sophisticated consumers, look, this can be healthy for you. And we're doing that with this outdoorsy brand. So a great place to have jerky is hiking. Unfortunately, not many of us will be hiking as much as we want to be. So at least when I'm meeting this at my desk, I can be looking at this illustration, just wishing I was there. And that's what we're trying to achieve.
How fast has the market grown in the US?
I think meat snacks as a whole grew at about 20% last year, which is huge when you consider it's a big market. And inside meat snacks, it's more than just jerky. You also have formed products. One thing that's taken off recently is meat bars. So people are making muesli bars with meat. That started off with beef and lamb. The sort of hottest product on the market is made with insect protein.
Right.
Yeah. So this is really catering to that hardcore paleo crowd. But then we think jerky is probably growing less than that, maybe around 12%. In Australia, the thing is we've just got to do the research and work out what it would take to succeed in that market.
Well, first steps first. You've had some support from the federal government?
That's right. We've recently been awarded a federal grant, $160,000 to expand the site here. It's paid over 2 years. And the goal of this whole program is to create jobs. So as part of this grant, we've said before July 2017, we'll create 8 jobs on this site.
Good luck with that.
Thank you very much.